This is Pretty Much Pop, a culture podcast, pretty much your only refuge from a violent, radiated world. So we're going to have to ask you to start wearing matching jumpsuits, just for starters. Today we're discussing the Fallout franchise in light of a new Amazon Prime adaptation of this video game series, originally created by Tim Kaine in 1997. My name is Mark Lintonmeyer, currently enjoying a refreshing iguana on a stick.
This is Al Baker, just thinking about how video game adaptations come, video game adaptations go, but podcasting never changes.
My name is Sarah Lynn Bruck, and I'm not a synth, I think.
My name is Lawrence Ware, coming to you from Oklahoma, and I don't like to be called a ghoul. I am a necrotic post-human.
Ooh.
All right, so let's give our priors here. This is one that I have deep and long. I played Fallout 1 when it came out, to the end. Fallout 2, not quite to the end, but pretty darn far until I couldn't get past some certain part, right toward the end. Fallout 3, I played to the end. Not too much of the DLCs. They didn't seem that interesting. But then Fallout 4, over 100 hours, I had logged. And New Vegas, I didn't finish, but I played that a good amount as well. I just reinstalled Fallout 4 to get all the DLCs and play a little bit of that and all the new. They just did a big new update in light of the TV series. So I was very excited for the show coming out. And I think the show captures the tone of the games very well. Al, you have a good background with these, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm to the point where I think I am appropriately and fully impressed with the fact that you played Fallout 1 to the end, because my first Fallout game was Fallout 2, which I played, I think, when it came out, but didn't finish it. I think I was too young to have a chance to finish it, and I think I played it in inverted commas in that, like, I bashed my mouse and keyboard around a little bit. I don't remember being good at it in any respect, but I played Fallout 3 when it came out because it was the huge thing. I played New Vegas a lot, and I played Fallout 4 an awful lot as well. I just looked at my play times now as well to see if I could compete. I've got over 100 hours in each of those, so I've definitely played them all at least once. Big fan of the world and of the lore, and I thought that this TV show was really faithful to the important parts of the franchise. I thought it was really good.
Ooh. Lawrence, had you spent time with this before?
I know that I played Fallout 4 at some point, but I do not have the deep and abiding connection to the game series that you guys have. And so I'm kind of coming into the TV show as a newbie, so I cannot compare the tones of the television show to the tone of the game, but I can say that I really do enjoy the tone of that television show. But yeah, I don't have much of a connection at all. Sarah, what's up with you?
I'm a total newbie when it comes to this world. My husband had all the games though. So and he encouraged me to play a little bit of Fallout 3 and Fallout 4, since the show matches so much of the tone of those two games. And there are certain Easter eggs and things like that that you can find in the show. This was all new information for me, a completely new world, a completely new story for me. But I did enjoy playing what I did of those games. I can see why people were so into them. I loved just how you can explore the world. It's so much different than just going from point A to point B to point C, and I still did not play very many video games either, but those were the ones that I was most used to. And this one I found really fascinating because it was just completely exploration. Like, you can play a completely different game from somebody else. And I loved the fact that once I started getting into the television show, it was definitely a more enjoyable experience having already played, you know, just a couple of hours of those games. So I really enjoyed the whole experience. And in fact, I might go back to Fallout 4 and try and play a little more.
Yeah, I was just watching some videos about that, how Fallout 4, they added a crafting component. They had been playing Minecraft, developers, between 3 and 4. And and they had trouble with the playtesting because so many of the playtesters would just get sucked into the crafting component and never actually finish the game.
I could totally see that. Yeah, I mean, there are places where you can build things and make new weapons, I'm guessing, and things like that. And actually, I don't like shooter games. I like puzzle games. And I hear, is this right? You could actually play this game without killing anybody? Is that true?
Yeah, there are actually quite famous, I mean, famous in inverted commas, but playthroughs of the Fallout games online from people doing no kills, people doing versions of it where you, I mean, it's built right into the game that you can play without using weapons. You can just like fist fight your way to the end. But also, there's a lot to say. I don't know how deep into the games we're going to get in this chat, but a lot about how beloved, especially the later installments in the Fallout series are, has to do with the people who made them and their approach to game design. Bethesda in particular just seems to have this kind of ludicrously beautiful philosophy of just throwing as many game systems into the world as possible. And, you know, to hell with it if that means that there are way too many bugs to make the game playable in early release. There's so much that you can do in the Fallout game. Similarly with the Elder Scrolls games, which they also did. It is trivially easy to break the game in innumerable ways. And that's given the games a bit of staying power and, as well in the community. They're very easy to mod as well. So there's a huge community of people who build little extra components of the games, new levels, new weapons, new systems, which, you know, can break the game even further. But the whole series is intended to be a playground and is very, very good at that.
So I have a question then. Now that we're talking about the television show, do you enjoy it more because you have played the games? Because so, for example, The Last of Us television show on HBO, it followed, now that one I did play, it followed pretty closely the story of The Last of Us, right? Now, my impression is that Fallout is different. That Fallout, it gets the world right, but it tells its own story within that particular world. So do you enjoy the television show more having played the games? Or do you think that you would enjoy it just as much if you did not play the games?
I think there's always some... We did at some point a action figures episode that when you have in one medium a representation of something and then you get to see it sort of, in that case, it's like actually holding it in your hands that there's something. But in this, you know, it's similar in terms of when it's a adaptation of a comic book or, any sort of transition like that. There's something very satisfying about that, which might be sort of a short term, like it's a very surface level sort of thing. Every little design element is taken from the video games, as far as I could tell. And going into that first city that she goes into, I was convinced that it actually was the first city from Fallout 3.
Megaton.
Really? Megaton.
Yeah, I thought it was too.
I thought like that they had made the map exactly. There was enough of the impression of it, of, you know, what these storefronts and things look like, that I feel like they, you know, so there's something very cool about that. You know, if they hadn't lived up to the spirit of the thing, and I don't know, this is something to get into, is sort of like, what is the humor? What, having started with Fallout 1 and 2, that's before, that's not a first-person shooter game. That's like a top-down, you're moving, it's much, the whole thing... The effect is it's much more sort of comic book like throughout.
Interesting.
I had played Oblivion, the Elder Scrolls game, before Fallout 3, and just thought, like, really? They had just had to take this thing that I liked so much and make it just like these other games that they make. And I found something a little disappointing about that, in that it sort of skewed with the tone a little bit to me, because I liked it purely comic booky, not, okay, we're going to have some, you know, your level up screens or whatever, and there's going to be like elements of the little comic guys in it. But for the most part, it's going to be, you know, just this live action thing. And so I think I warmed to it. And in seeing it in the show, I don't know. I guess that's a question for you folks, is what you thought of the tone of this, in that, you know, it's a very black comedy, but there's lots of violence, but it's not like The Boys or something where like the violence is just there purely to laugh at. Like, it's kind of realistic and grim violence in a way
disturbing
that is more disturbing.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm.
But there's also certain things that they did with this game that are very game specific that they incorporated into the show, like all of the sim packs, and that you can, you know, if you lose your finger, you can get a new one.
I was fascinated by that. Yeah, I was fascinated by it.
I thought they did a really good job of something that I think would have been creatively a huge hurdle to think, how can we make this into a linear type of story that someone who didn't play the games be able to understand. And I think that they did that really, really well.
The mysteries that they set up, that they got the audiences interested in, was such a great way of exploring the lore. I feel like at the end of the first season of the TV show, you know about as much about the lore of the Fallout world as I probably got from two or three of the get, like, apart from like specific things that happened in specific places, but in terms of like why the world is the way it is, who the major players are, and what the like key historical events are that got us up to this point, is all laid out really neatly for you and was explained in a way that didn't get boring or tedious at any point. There weren't very many like big boring lore dumps. There was this whole, I mean, presumably we're going to talk about how wonderful, what's his name, Goggins, Walter Goggins,
mm-hmm.
is,
oh, yeah.
in the show, the throughout.
He is wonderful.
All of the flashbacks from that character, just brilliant ways of getting lore drops into the show. So there's all the little things that are more like Easter eggs, maybe the inclusion of Stimpaks and like Rocket Cola, is it? And oh, Nuka Cola, sorry. And
Nuka Cola, yeah.
And the fact that bottle caps are the currency and all that kind of stuff, which is just all lovely little Easter eggs. But that what I would have thought would be the hardest stuff, they managed with great aplomb, all of the heavy backstory and the lore and everything they managed to get in there and get across in a really, really fun way. It didn't feel like anyone would, from my perspective as someone who knows the games, didn't feel like anyone would struggle to follow the show or what was going on. So, and getting back to your original question, Lawrence, I don't actually think I would necessarily have enjoyed the show much less had I not played the games, because I got to go, oh, I recognize X, Y thing, oh, like, this is cool, or it's nice that this is consistent with the games. But the most important thing in this adaptation, I think, is the tone and the humor and the design.
It's a very interesting tone. Yeah.
All of that stuff is spot on for me. And just one more point about the plot. Because, yeah, you mentioned, Lawrence, they did do their own plot. It would have been incredibly difficult to adapt a plot straight from one of the previous games, because, as Sarah said, so much of the experience of the game is just about creating the story for yourself. You know, you go where you want to go, you do what you want to do. There's a lot of like choice-driven gameplay. So it would have been very hard to like tell the story of the courier from New Vegas or the wanderer from whichever other game it was. But the story that they landed on the TV show is absolutely a story that could be in any of the games. Like, you start off as a vault dweller, your vault gets raided, you need to find this MacGuffin and take it to somewhere to save the world or to save the region. And it's not the world's most interesting plot, but the main storyline of any of the games is never the most interesting thing.
Right.
The most interesting thing is exploring the world, meeting these interesting characters, and hopefully getting to engage in really fun, silly dialogue with a lot of these people, which is driven by the choices that you've made. That stuff, I think they nailed absolutely. It was great. It was great, however, knowing what the chicken fucker was and having him. That was my favorite Easter egg, the chicken fucker turned up.
That's from the games?
That's from the game.
I didn't remember that exactly, but I thought I was just thinking about that as like, that is the kind of exchange that could have happened in the games. Like, the writing was entirely consistent, but I didn't actually remember.
It was so weird. That was so strange.
That was hilarious. What about the Brotherhood of Steel? Was that part of the games?
Yeah, I have a question about that, too. Is that from the games?
It is, but so this is one of the things. It seems like no show feels like it can just have one point of view character. And I feel like I would have liked it better if it was just Lucy in her vault, just like in the video game. Oh, now I'm opened up to the wide world. And then introduce these other characters and maybe have flashbacks to them to give their backstories or something. But to just start us with three different characters that have to then come together, I don't know. I've seen that in too many shows recently, and I was more interested in her thing rather than the internal politics of the Brotherhood of Steel or whatever. As cool as Power Armor is, that's supposed to be something that, you know, you don't get right away. Mm. You have to build up to that.
I think it works, if only because again, but a huge point of the games, especially the more recent ones, is as the character, you get to decide which faction you're going to ally with, and that turns into a huge part of the story that you develop for yourself. And the Brotherhood of Steel crops up in a bunch of the games as one faction that you can ally with.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing with the Brotherhood of Steel is always they will give you power armor and they're super strong and they're super powerful, but they are also, you know, theocratic fascists. And are you comfortable aligning yourself with those kind of people? And all of the factions have their own like weird stuff going on. But I thought the multiple lead characters, even though it was a little bit unbalanced because Lucy is clearly the main character. Mm-hmm. You don't care as much about the others. It takes a while for the Brotherhood of Steel plot to get going. I think it's a pretty good way of exploring the different factions within the world and giving them more airtime than you get to have if it was more of a like Wizard of Oz journey where Lucy like crops up at the Brotherhood of Steel compound one day and then decides that she doesn't want to be a part of them, and then we move on to the next thing.
The character of Maximus, he was such a dope at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. He was.
Which is funny.
He was pretty
hilarious. And I ended up kind of loving him by the end. But I thought that storyline was tough to kind of bring in together. And it was awkward at first. I thought that it was a really awkward way to bring these three characters together from the very beginning, because you just, you know, you'd start in with Lucy and it's like, okay, I understand why we're here and why we're with her. And then with the ghoul, and his backstory was so rich and he's such a great character. I couldn't stop. I just wanted to watch him the whole time. And then the Maximus storyline just didn't seem to be as important as the other two. And I had a really hard time, I think, at the beginning. And they did a better job, I think, as they went, bringing those three storylines together by the end. And, you know, they all made sense. But from the beginning, it just felt like, oh, man, now we're with Maximus. Let's go back to Lucy. Mm-hmm. I want to find out what's going on with her and how she's going to find her dad and all of that kind of stuff. I just didn't feel like it was done as well at the beginning. It was very awkward.
Okay, maybe it's because I am who I am, but I absolutely enjoy that Maximus. Now, the Lucy thing was interesting, but really my two favorite characters are the ghoul and Maximus, honestly. Going back to what Al said, if you had stayed with Lucy, it would have been like a Wizard of Oz tale, right? And you follow this character, and the world slowly opens up the more you follow this character going through whatever. What going to three different characters does is it instantly opens up the world and lets you know this world is big, it's expansive, there's a lot going on. And so I really, really enjoy that. I think Walter Goggins by far steals the show. Like, every scene he's in is really, really good. I thought the character design was interesting, like him not having a nose. It's just really interesting. I really enjoyed the character. But I enjoyed Maximus, and I don't know if it's because I'm a black guy and I just enjoyed hanging out with a black guy. I genuinely don't know. But I really, really, really enjoyed that Maximus. And I enjoyed that he was a dope at the beginning. And like even Walter Goggins, what is he? Walter Goggins earlier says, you drive that thing like a shopping cart. Like it's clear that he doesn't know how to use that suit very, very well. And he's kind of slowly figuring it out here and there. But I enjoyed that character and like his earnestness. And like he was like a down and out character, but he had like a little smirk to him, a little bit of fire to him. I enjoyed that. And I enjoyed seeing Michael Rapaport there early. And it was kind of funny seeing him as a strict gameplay kind of thing. Lucy is very interesting. But I really enjoy that Maximus. And I think the ghoul is wonderful. Like, but I love that the show kind of plays with Western motifs, right? So the ghoul walks into a town and he clears that town out in the way that like a Clint Eastwood would in like A Fistful of Dollars or something like that, right? But so I really enjoyed that. And that's what made that really interesting. That's what kind of drew me to it. Because I love Westerns. And it has that. Now, I don't know if that's like the game, but it's really cool, really fun to kind of see them playing with those motifs while placing it vis-a-vis, you know, this science fiction kind of tale. I really enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, given the choice to have it three characters in parallel, really four, because you're still like, what's going on in the vault with her brother?
And the dog. Don't forget the dog. Dog's important.
The dog has his own arc. I thought it was very well done. You know, I have to sort of see it again to sort of gauge was my level of interest in it. I don't know, but particularly in retrospect, or, you know, having it as then like a meet cute, you know, that whole first scene where they're all together and fighting each other. Yeah. Like, I really enjoyed, if anything, I just thought maybe like the Michael Emerson character, the scientist, was going to be a bigger deal. Like, was going to actually be a character.
I was kind of shocked by how fast they dispatched him. Yeah. Really fast. But like, I mean, I was really surprised by how fast they dispatched a character.
There were some good cameos in the show.
I was surprised by how many cameos there were. They were all over the place.
I know. It was so delicious.
I just want to heap more praise on the way that they killed that character, because when Dogmeat shows up, Dogmeat shows up, right, and just for the record, Dogmeat, I think, is the longest running character in the Fallout universe. I know he showed up in the very first game and in the second one. I can't remember if he's in Fallout 3. But he's in Fallout 4 too. So Dogmeat, the dog character, is the, I don't know, what's the
R2-D2 of the...
He's the R2-D2 of the Fallout universe. And as soon as you realize it's Dogmeat, I'm just sitting there like screaming at the show saying, you do not get to hurt that dog, because he's having a bad time when you see the dog. And you're just sitting there saying, that dog better be okay. And I was so, and then when the scientist dies, I was so relieved that the dog was going to be okay. I just didn't care. And I thought that was handled brilliantly, because you also do have to establish in a show like this that nobody has plot armor. Everyone's disposable.
Very true.
Because it's a brutal, horrible wasteland. And I think they did that in an excellent way.
Retrofuturism. What do we you know, this is a prime thing about the, about the tone of this alternate history. This is not just science fiction. This is like alternate history. True. that semiconductors were never created. It's all vacuum tubes.
Yeah, and microchips. That's the
that nuclear power, when it was invented in the 50s and the 40s, was then used to its utmost to create all this extra stuff. And I guess somehow then the rest of culture didn't progress. There's no all the music.
Not in the U.S.
Yeah,
anyway.
The music is very retro. I got a feeling that it was like steampunk, and correct me, but it feels very steampunk-ish, like adjacent.
I mean, it's right. It's a different historical juxtaposition, but it's the same strategy. Yeah.
Mid-century. Yeah.
The retrofuturism in Fallout is something that you have to look at through squinted eyes and not ask too many questions about, because it doesn't make sense. But it's awesome. It's great that there are vacuum tube powered robots and that everyone's still eating like 1950s freeze dried meals.
Doesn't make sense, but it's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't really have too many points of reference for retrofuturism, but the aesthetic just appeals to me, and it seems to appeal to everyone. The like country and western easy listening soundtrack that you get through all the games, and the like the plucky, overly positive Vault-Tec design, the Fallout Boy logo and everything, is just brilliant. And where did they get, does anyone have any idea what the influences were for that whole shtick? Because it just works.
It does. It made me think of the conversation that we had on Black Mirror just this past season of the two astronauts. Remember that? Yeah, and I wondered if it was just, this is when the U.S. was kind of at its most powerful and feeling the most confident, and it was pre-Vietnam and Reagan and Trump. So I just wondered if it was just set in that time just to kind of, I don't know, talk about the power of capitalism and things like that.
I guess there's that neat like juxtaposition running through the whole thing, really bitter kind of irony between this version of American exceptionalist optimism, like mid-century exceptionalist optimism you have, against the background of the nuclear devastation, which was entirely a product of that very same optimism. Maybe that's, it just comes from that because it's a delightful irony that someone was always bound to get to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I'm kind of fascinated, and I don't know if you guys picked up on this, but the racial politics of this place, because like Walter Goggins has a biracial daughter at the beginning of the show.
Oh, yeah.
And then it seems like the black people are not treated as other that much. Like, I genuinely don't know what to make of that. But it's a very kind of idealistic arrangement of how racial politics work in this particular world. I'm just fascinated by it. I've never really genuinely seen very much media or read very many books that kind of place racial politics in that kind of way. And I'm fascinated by it because in my understanding of it, like the nuclear stuff happened in the like 50s, 60s or something like that, right?
Right.
Like right there in the middle of like all this racial turmoil, but yet he has a biracial daughter. There is no racial turmoil as far as I can tell by what's going on. I'm just fascinated by it. I think it's really, really interesting. It's a very
that's
interesting
right.
vision yeah. of how America could be in that kind of situation.
No, that's so interesting because I did notice that like in the vaults, which we know were manipulated, but you're right though, 200 years prior, there were people of color who were in positions of power, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
I noticed that too. That's a really good point. I wonder what they were trying to say about that, because that is truly an alternate reality.
Yeah.
That's a really good thing to point out. I kind of figured they were taking a Bridgerton strategy in so far
so?
As
so?
We're just going to tell the story and pretend that like racial segregation wasn't a thing in this period in history for the sake of like being able to tell a story with a diverse range of characters and not make that the focus. Honestly, I have the same question with Bridgerton as I do with this as to whether that's a good way of going about it, but it seems to be something that a bunch of showrunners have decided is a good balance to strike. Because like being able to have representative casts and not having to make the whole show about racial politics.
Mm-hmm.
My understand, I didn't watch like the Bridgerton prequel or whatever, but that they'd, you know, how did the queen get to be black or whatever, that became a thing that then they talked about. I don't think that in this show we're going to get any insight unless some particular writer really thinks like, we can't just paper that over this, you know, that it's important to tell this, you know, as part of our story. Because it's like in Star Trek, you know, put forward as, look, we're completely integrated, but that's sort of part and parcel of we no longer have an economy of scarcity where people have to be pushed around and played off each other in the way that they are. But the exact opposite has happened in the Fallout universe that looking at some of the online lore that like the whole reason for the wars and things is not just, you know, capitalists trying to get themselves rich as this show might tell you, but because of shortages of, you know, that they're still using, which it did finally, they had the thing about one of the MacGuffins is a fusion energy, you know, free energy, but that like part of the retrofuturist thing or the retro thing is everything being grimy and internal combustion and et cetera. And that being like the reason that all these countries were in competition and killing each other.
I wonder if it was born out of the game itself, because the first thing that you do when you start playing the game is you get to pick your character. And you get to pick your gender, you get to pick the style of your hair, you get to pick your skin tone. And I wonder if it's just coming from that, you know, recognizing that audiences want to see themselves in the games that they play and also in the shows that we watch.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. On the tone and the retrofuturism, I had a question about the Fallout vision of the future and the Fallout tone and Fallout's humor. The satire, I guess. This is an adaptation of a game that was first made when mid-90s? Yeah, and the mid-90s is exactly when you would expect to find this kind of take on the post-apocalypse, because everything in the mid-90s was going great, and there was no, like, apocalypse. We'd just seen off one threat of apocalypse. There was no real apocalyptic threat in the vision at the time. So it's like culturally a safe moment to have a good old laugh at the prospect of nuclear annihilation and how humanity, and particularly America, might manage in the aftermath. We have that property and that vision now that we can make that adaptation. But do you think that that's something that it seems to me of its time? It seems to me like a 90s take on the post-apocalypse. We referenced The Last of Us later. That seems like more of a a noughties to a more recent, more like relevant right now kind of take on post-apocalypse and like how we deal with that culturally, in that it is gritty and sad, right? Because like we live in slightly more apocalyptic times now than we did 25 years ago. So it seems to me like it might be more difficult for someone to come up with out of whole cloth something as funny and like reasonably, yeah, funny and fun as Fallout now. What does anyone think about that? I don't know if that's just me being, that could just be me being pessimistic, but it seems like an artifact of the time that it was initially created.
When did the first Fallout come out?
You said
97.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we were living in a different time then. I remember in the 90s, man, you can go to the airport, go to the terminal. It was before 9/11. We did have a certain kind of optimism. I think you might be onto something there, Al, that this coming out in the 90s does give it the flavor that it does have, because post 2001, it would have been grittier and it would have been like Bourne movies, like, you know, very gritty, very shaky cam kind of whatnot. But this being very classical and whatnot, and also having the tie that it does to the 1950s, 1960s, I do think it gives it this, it gives it the optimism and the tone that it does have. Now, it does have that shocking violence here and there, right? The doctor gets his like leg shot, right? And then not long after, he gets like a mechanic foot. And I'm guessing that's kind of comes from out of the game and when the games are done. So that what that scene says to me is that there is violence, but it's not like end of the world violence. It's not like, you know, things really going to be bad. Like he's going to go down. Like, for example, she has, and by the way, the beginning of this is kind of strange to me. Like she's getting married, she has sex, and then the guy tries to, it's kind of dark, man. I don't, it made me feel uncomfortable. Anyway, yeah. But she gets.
Oh, it's great.
It's so weird, man. I genuinely don't know how I feel about that. But she gets stabbed, and I thought, holy crap, that's fucking bad. Like, she's going to be, like, dealing with that for the rest of the show. Instead, she gets a shot, and she's fine. It lets me know, okay, something's going on there with that stim pack stuff, right? Clearly, there's something going on there that I didn't understand when I first saw it. But it does have violence, and the violence can be tragic, but it's not that tragic. So it doesn't go into the realm of where, like, post 2001 stuff would have gone into. And so therefore, I think you're right, Al, that it does harken back to a time where things were nicer, simpler. I don't know, but you're right. I think that all comes from the time period in which this kind of was kind of crafted, kind of came together. I think you're right about that. I'm not sure I like the way it begins, though. That made me feel very weird. I like the show, but I just...
I loved how weird she was.
She is weird.
She wasn't such as... She wasn't just this doe-eyed, yeah, you know, innocent. She was like, you know, she made some comment about how you can have sex with your cousins, but you can't marry them.
Yeah,
like something like that. I was like,
She's like naive, but also very sexually forward. It's a weird... It's weird.
So
it's
very funny. I just thought it was so well played.
That kind of threw me. I didn't realize the whole, you know, it's sort of revealed toward the end of the show that, oh, all the vaults are different and they were created for different purposes. And I just thought, like, they're getting it wrong. They're not supposed to be vaults connected to each other. There's not supposed to be, like, what? We're getting an arranged marriage plot. Like, this has nothing to do with anything that was in the Fallout games. You know, the Fallout games are like, oh, the water's broken and somebody needs to go out and find a new water thing. My dad's gone. I need to go find my dad. Both of those things happen in the show, but that's not the immediate impetus.
Mm-hmm. I like that we got to spend more time in the vault and be able to check out each of the vault cultures and how they were different and just how crazy weird they all were. They were all like mini cults. It was just fascinating.
Absolutely, they were. They absolutely were.
We didn't get drug use in this season, did we? Because it's actually a huge thing in the game.
Well, what, like, about the ghoul? I thought he was taking drugs.
Well, yeah, he was. But it's not like a major plot point, though. Like, it's common. Like, he does it, but it's not like driving the plot.
But it was very important for him.
True.
It was driving his whole character because he would go become a feral ghoul That's if right. he did not take
that's
those.
Right.
But that's unlike the, you know, it's a very game mechanical sort of thing of, you know, take some jet and you get a little extra strong and you can shoot better. Or but if you do this too much during the game, then you get addicted and then you have a penalty as you're walking around until you like take some more drugs that cures addictions.
Oh my God, I did not get that far in the game.
The game is really like that?
Yeah, yes.
Holy crap.
I mean, you can just never do that. That's fine.
I just realized I got to the point where I needed to get unload a lot of the garbage I had been collecting the entire time.
I'll tell you. So just returning to the game for the first time in a long time, while I appreciated it and it was, you know, good to sort of refresh myself, it's a little grindy that it's just like go and kill a bunch of things over here. And I'm basically using the same weapons to do it, and it's the same mechanics, and then deal with inventory issues, deal with like all this crap that you're collecting. And if you want to craft and you want to upgrade, then you have to collect, like, I have to collect all these things that have adhesive or ceramic. Like, so you are purposefully picking up like plates and clipboards and stuff like that.
Desk fans. I remember getting every single desk fan that I could while I was playing Fallout 4 because desk fans always had screws in and you needed screws for weapons, but that loaded down always.
That's a good tip.
But yeah, it's weird. Trouser management has always been a big part of all those kind of games. And I don't know about the combat being repetitive, I think is an interesting point, but that's why I always play gunslingers or like some I always want a John Wayne kind of fantasy when I'm playing a Fallout game, because I will never get tired of slow-mo headshotting a super mutant in the distance with my revolver. That's just awesome. So yeah, I'm happy to do that for 80 hours at a stretch, and maybe that's why I like those games so much.
Well, I know you don't, you're not a fan of big reaction time games. This Brian Hurt was going to be on the show with us. And that's another thing that, like, I couldn't get him to play Dark Souls or something like that, that he would die. You know, that was very frustrating. But with this, it has this VAT system where you get to pick which part of your body you're shooting for, and things are still moving. It's not like it's not paused, but it's slowed down vastly. And but even that, if you use it constantly, becomes pretty repetitive. So
if you don't know,
maybe just the parts that I was playing of the game in returning to it and the quality of these new quests, which are go fight some stuff over there, go fight some stuff over there. Maybe it's just, you know, I'm no longer exploring the world. Like if that is the what is so cool is the first time you run into a new faction and a new way of being weird. A new little secret, discovering a new vault that is overgrown in a different way or a new kind of city. I think that's the real appeal. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a good time to bring up one of the things that the Fallout games and Bethesda games in general do extremely well, which is like emergent storytelling from the world. So one of the best kinds of storytelling, I think, in the Fallout games are not from the direct quests, because yeah, so often that's just go here and kill all the things there. But while you're there, or on the way there, maybe you find a hidden entrance to a vault that you didn't know was going to be there. And then you go into the vault and there's not someone there who's going to talk to you, but there are a bunch of corpses laid out in a weird and interesting way. And then you find a computer terminal and it gives you some background information on like the experiment that Vault Tech was running on that vault. And it turns out everyone there was, you know, had a party for 10 years until everyone starved to death. And that was what was happening in that vault. But it's a really cool way of exposing the player to backstory without having to like put a bunch of dialogue options in or like even having the player like read a whole bunch. You can just go into these weird places. They're so good at populating just like little bits of scenery with really interesting bits of story. And they reference this, I think, in the TV show really early on when Lucy comes out into the vault, and I think the first house that she finds, it turns out that the everyone there's dead, and that they had all that the mother had killed the entire family rather than live in the wasteland. And the way that story was told was really reminiscent of the stuff they do in the video games, because it was exactly the player just wandering into this house and going like, "What happened here?"
Yeah, that's true. I liked though that the show brought in the ghoul perspective from the past, though. I thought they did a really good job of bringing in all of the backstory in a way that it was kind of a slow drip, but it was also really, really interesting. And it was so integral to when those plot lines all threaded together by the end. But I thought they did a great job of that because, you know, having Lucy go around and be able to get that information on her own, like we would during the game, would have gotten so tiresome for a TV viewer.
Is this too dark? Like, it's certainly funny. I was definitely laughing, probably snickering more than I was laughing out loud, but I was definitely on the wavelength of the show. But it made me self-reflect on why am I laughing at this really, really dark thing that's happening? Because in any other context, this would be dark, right? So she walks into the family's house. The mother killed the entire family, but it doesn't hit in the same way that other shows would hit because the tone is so light, right? And and the tone is so interesting in how they tell the story. So, by the way, shout out to Jonathan Nolan, the brother Christopher Nolan, who was the director of the first two, maybe three episodes of the show, and is also an executive producer along with his wife, Lisa Joy, I believe her name is, because they did a really good job of modulating this tone. And I'm guessing of the little bit that I remember playing, it's very similar to the tone of the game. But I'm wondering, like, is it too dark? Like, does it go too far into darkness? Or do you think it's right on the level of a little darkness, but also a little comedic? Like, what do you guys think?
It's grim. I mean, that the guy, the he wasn't a doctor, but he was the one with all of the potions.
Right.
And the way that we're introduced to him is him just about with his toe on the trigger of a shotgun, ready to blow his brains out, and that was meant to be a kind of a laugh. Line, you know, that was meant, we were meant to go,
I know,
oh my God.
I know, but
you know, instead of how sad that is, but we're meant to just go, holy, I mean, Josh and I looked at each other. We were like, oh my God, why are we laughing at this? But I don't think, I think that that is absolutely right for the tone of this whole world. It absolutely worked for me. I thought that was actually kind of a brilliant little detail, as grim and dark as it was.
Yeah, I think they did. I think they did a great job of balancing the tone, and that was probably a really difficult thing to do as well as they did. Just even thinking back to the very, very to the opening with the raid. There's the wedding, and then the raid, and the wedding is almost entirely like ridiculous and played for laughs. And then you fall into this incredibly brutal, ultra-violent sequence, which still has some laughs played in it, but it doesn't detract from, it still reads as brutal, and you still really, I really felt for Lucy because she was about to have like a really nice moment, and then her entire life went to shit all at once, and that was a real, that felt like a real gut punch. But the things that were played for laughs were still funny, and I'm not a technically proficient enough critic to understand how they made that work. But none of the shots they took really felt tonally off to me, which is really impressive given how widely the tone varies.
Maybe for a point of comparison, I don't know how many of you have seen Argylle recently.
Not yet.
No.
Very polarizing film, but it has these action things toward the end of it where like it's slow motion, but they're just joyful dancing, like they're even playing rock music, and it's probably, this is done in several other movies, you know, when you have something that is so choreographed and like horrible stuff is happening, people, you know, so in the case of Fallout, you know, people fork to the eye, and you know, just these very bothersome things, but it's done in such a stylistic way that it feels, I don't know, maybe because we're such a depraved violence desensitized culture that like if you had just done this in the 70s or something, like it would have been a very, very different effect, as you know, we're going to talk upcoming in about Road Warrior, where there's a scene of just like a guy trying to catch like a sort of a glaive, you know, a sort of a frisbee, and his fingers get cut off. And like, that was way more horrible just watching one guy lose some fingers than this entire battle scene for me, just because of where we're at now.
You did just remind me of the whole thing in the bit at the beginning with the Brotherhood of Steel and the guy who gets his foot cut up because someone, spoiler alert, has put razor blades in his boot. And that made me want to crawl out of my skin for days.
Yeah.
It was so bloody. It was so bloody, that scene.
That guy's foot that he needed to get fixed was, that was a look away moment. Mm. It was disgusting.
It was like a simple razor blade in that boot. And it looked like, it's so gnarly. Like, I genuinely don't know why it was that bloody. It was over the top.
It was a bunch of razor blades. Let's just be clear.
But was it a bunch? I thought it was just one.
It was a bunch of razor blades.
Well, that makes a little bit more sense, I guess.
And it's not a real, I don't think this is a real spoiler, but I do want to say that the fact that plot turns on the fact that somebody did that to themselves, and that for me is the least believable thing in the entire show, that someone would willingly put their foot in that boot.
Yeah, so I guess within the world, I would have liked a little more, like, let's go out and kill some giant scorpions rather than let me cut up my foot with a bunch of razor blades. Like, it just would have been a more of a fun time for me.
The restraint. Can we talk about the restraint of the show? I mean, this is only for me and you, Mark, but no death claws yet.
Yeah, I watched a video about that. Apparently there's a skull right at the end.
Yeah. Oh, so there you go. That's right.
Because it was just, they want to give.
No idea.
There's elements in the game. You're just constantly fighting different things, of course, in a game, but you can't do that in a show. Like, you want to make, there's a fishy creature, whatever that thing is that they...
The goldfish.
Oh, with the finger mouth?
Yes,
that was like, so gross.
And you want to give it its due. So sort of like, you know, the spider in Lord of the Rings or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a giant spider. That's like the crappiest, you know, Dungeons and Dragons monster. But like, no, we're going to make this the center of a third of one of the most important fantasy movies. Because I think that was the strategy. Like, we're going to have death claws, but like, we're going to devote some time to it. It's not going to.
I think that's impressive. Super mutants. Exactly. So death claws and super mutants, some of the like iconic monsters from the show. And I think a lesser showrunner or a lesser series creator would have thought, okay, we've got to hook the fanboys in right away. So episode one, we'll get them to fight a Deathclaw. Episode two, the super mutants will turn up. Episode three, like at the Brotherhood of Steel or break into the new Coca-Cola factory. And we just get every single reference we possibly can splattered all over this first season to make sure that the fanboys are with us. And I was just genuinely impressed by the fact that they held back on Deathclaws for the whole series, because it would have been a really easy way to get social media like buzzing with nerds saying, oh, I know what a Deathclaw is.
Yeah, but who is the audience for this show?
Apparently everybody.
I think that's what they nailed. It is actually everyone.
It's a show for everyone.
Everybody who's hardened to that level of violence. But, yeah, everyone. So the people,
I don't think I would recommend this to everybody.
The Game of Thrones audience.
Well, certainly not kids.
Or my mother.
Or my mother, or
the,
my mother.
The Westworld audience, etc.
If you like the boys, you'll probably like this. If you like,
science fiction.
Yeah.
Some science fiction, yeah. Anime, probably.
I don't really like science fiction, and I liked this.
You don't like science fiction?
It's definitely
science. I mean, is there really science fiction? I mean, there's alternate science and stuff, but hard science fiction is like, what would the world be like? Like, is an analysis of technology, basically, of, you know, what would the world be like if this were realized? Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any of that in here. I mean, it's more of a fantasy based on fear, right? That's what horror is, right? It's what the post-apocalyptic world is. But given that we've already had horror about post-apocalyptic, now it's a familiar, nostalgic thing for us, even as audience members, in addition to the 50s, 60s nostalgia. So it's just a late cultural creation.
I was wondering, is this show and game series, is it progressive, or is it sort of making fun of progressives, or maybe both?
That's a real good question. I think it leans more on the second. It's definitely capital L liberalism comes under a lot of satirical flack throughout the series, I think. Like, because the idea that, in general, the idea that, oh, can't we just get along? Fallout is like one big, like, shout. No, we can't. And here's why. And if you try, that in like a state of nature, this is, you're going to get what's coming to you. But it's also just bleak and dark. And maybe it doesn't have much of a coherent political message, but if it does, it's definitely on the libertarian end of things. I think that's bolstered by the fact that any organized group that you come across in any of the Fallout games is fatally compromised in one way or the other.
It does feel that way.
Yeah, these are always going to be, I don't know if exploring morality is too strong, because it's, I did like the fact that somebody on the staff, there's some, at some point the nerds in the vault are like, we're going to reform the Raiders by, first we're going to teach them some Kant and some, but sort of morality in a broken world is an overall theme of, is our protagonist just being naive in, trying not to just kill everybody. Is Walter Goggins' character going to rediscover his humanity by being put in touch with somebody like this? When just everybody is a snake oil salesman at best, and every organization has some sort of agenda, even if they think they say they're doing things for public good. How is one even supposed to react to that situation?
The ghoul, there is some humanity still left in him. He's more aligned with Lucy than he may think he is.
He's a three-dimensional character, to be sure.
He is. Yeah, I agree.
But as an individual, crucially, it's up to him as an individual to right the wrongs, not by, like, it's not by leaning back on any particular political philosophy.
True.
And I never thought about this before, but isn't the whole, like, the core of the satire of what's going on with Vault Tech and the vaults, the whole idea there is, oh, the world is ending, and we know that post-apocalyptically, American bucolic 1950s society, bucolic's not the right word, but American 1950s nuclear family, no pun intended, that kind of society will not survive, or like, it is not appropriate for the wasteland, or rather the wasteland is not appropriate for our ideal American society. So the solution there is not to adapt your culture or your politics to suit the world as it now is, but to just put your ideal culture and politics in a bunker underground until the world is ready for you to dominate it again. I don't think I've ever realized how funny that is as a satire on like American exceptionalism.
Mm-hmm.
America, we are taking for granted as our premise that 20th century American politics and culture is the height of humanity. And if the world changes so that that's no longer the case, then God damn it, we're just going to wait until it can be the case again.
That's an interesting read on that, Al. Yeah.
Let's just repopulate the earth with people who agree with us. Easy.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to completely give away the ending, but that is a sentiment expressed in the final episode. Surprisingly little that we didn't actually spoil very much.
No, we didn't actually. We didn't.
And yet I don't think we at the beginning sort of gave, like, somebody really didn't know what this was.
Yes.
Definitely wouldn't. Still. So, this is something worth exploring for people that have been muddling through just because it was the next thing in the feed. Let me say that. any other final thoughts?
I will say I am genuinely shocked that this is as popular as it is. I really...
The show or the game?
Not the game, the show. Like, I am shocked. Like, my mother watched 3 episodes of it.
Wow.
And she's going to finish it. She told me.
OMG.
And then, like, I had an aunt who's older than her. Like, she's, like, I think in her 70s or something like that. And she watched it, and she liked it. I genuinely do not know what it is about this show. Maybe it's the fact... It doesn't really do any overt allusions or anything like to religion necessarily. I genuinely don't know why, but this show is popular. It is probably one of Amazon's most popular shows.
And Amazon, of all companies, is putting this show out.
Yeah.
It's all Eric Estrada.
Oh, Eric Estrada. He was so, I was so happy to see him.
I bet Sarah's eyes got dreamy when she saw him.
You know it. You know it.
Oh,
a dazzling
man.
Smile.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, we'll probably talk a little more at patreon.com/prettymuchpop. Thanks for listening to this.
Thanks guys.
To all you. So long.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop. Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network, and it's also presented by OpenCulture.com.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 U.S.-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out Pear.com today to learn more. That's P-A-I-R.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with Audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.